Hello and welcome to Southeastern 16's Baseball Weekly. That's right. Our first week with Texas and Oklahoma as members of the SEC is also the week we are going to launch a weekly SEC baseball show. And by weekly, I mean off season two. So I don't know what we're going to talk about in the dead of winter, but we will find stuff. We'll interview coaches. We'll do something. I trust between myself, Graham, Doty and Alfred Esmond, who are with me, we will find something to talk about. Gentlemen, very excited to launch this show. Alfred, you were the first one of us between Graham and yourself to join me. I had a fun baseball season. Cannot wait to embark on this offseason with the two of you guys.
Yeah, very much so. It's exciting. I don't think a lot of people, or I don't think college baseball in general, is talked about enough by people once the offseason hits. And really, it's just you see transfer portal stuff on Twitter, and that's the extent of it. Hopefully, us three can go more into detail. And super excited now that two new teams are in the SEC. It just provides much more to talk about.
For sure. And Graham, I think baseball is a different sport than it was a decade ago with the portal, with coaching changes, with the draft. It just feels like within football, there's not an off season in football anymore. Baseball's becoming more that way too. So I think we will have plenty to talk about, even when it's months out from the season.
No doubt. And just think about more staff members for all these universities. And when you think about it, and look what the SEC looked like a decade ago, still the best conference in college baseball, but you still got a lot of familiar faces, Corbin, Van Horn, Mike Bianco. O'Sullivan's been in Florida for a minute now. So, I mean, it's an exciting time and can't wait to talk about SEC baseball with you guys.
Well, today we're going to get into Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC. We'll talk about the coaching carousel. Not only have two schools hired coaches this week, as we do this on July the 2nd, but several schools have hired assistants. Before that, South Carolina hired Paul Maneri. So we've got three coaching changes already, not to mention hitting coaches, pitching coaches. We've got some new guys there. And then transfer portal news. The portal closes, I think, tomorrow it is, but there will be guys landing places after that. So we will talk about where things are with the portal. Lots to get into today. Very excited about that. But first, a reminder, Southeastern 16 is brought to you by BetOnline, your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right to the top fights in UFC and MMA and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, even live odds and spreads. While the games are being played, when the game is over, head on over to our online casino. Get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today. Get in on all the action. Use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus. Your 50% free bet credit, that is, on your first deposit, up to $250. Bet online. The game starts here. All right, let's talk about the two teams that have entered the league, Texas and Oklahoma. We'll just go alphabetically. That would be Oklahoma first. Graham, what does Oklahoma bring to the league in baseball, you think?
Very, very good and solid program. And you think about the season they just had. They were a national seed and just did not make it out of the regional. Remember, 2 years ago, they were the runner-up. They ended up losing to that Ole Miss team that was just red hot. So Skip Johnson has been there for a while now. He's been there for 8 years, and he's done a very, very solid job. And remember, he had to deal with the COVID pandemic right in the middle of his tenure there. So he's built a very, very solid program. And again, finishes the runner up 2 years ago. They always have talent. They are investing in baseball with a renovation at their ballpark. So they will fit in very nicely in the SEC.
Alfred, Oklahoma's got a lot of big leaguers currently, and guys that have been there. I mean, Chase Anderson, John Gray, probably the most well-known active guy. You go back a few years, you got Cade Cavalli, who is a top pitching prospect for the Nationals. You got a lot of dudes that have played you know, a lot of ball at Oklahoma and done some good things. What comes to mind? I know just in the last 2-3 years, Oklahoma's had a lot of success, national runner up. But what are you looking forward to seeing about Oklahoma as it joins the SEC?
Yeah, I think it'll be cool. Obviously, we talked about this before coming on. They're going through a big renovation right now with their ballpark that you guys said has been behind for quite some time. And I think, you know, bringing that in shows that they're going to want to compete in this league and whatnot. And they're already making waves. I mean, I talked about it before coming on. This is kind of a early transfer portal update, but they landed Cam Johnson from LSU, and we saw Cam Johnson this year. Big, powerful left-hander. Didn't pitch as much as people would have liked, but, you know, big, powerful left-hander, has a lot of untapped potential is what a lot of people have said about him. So that'll be fun to see what Skip Johnson does with that. And Oklahoma is just a school surrounded by great athletic history, and that includes baseball. I mean, I think we talked about what they've done recently, but 3 straight NCAA tournaments. They got to the College World Series final in 2022 against Ole Miss. That was relatively recent. So they're a team that'll look to get competitive somewhat immediately, and that's the biggest thing with them. And they have the potential to do that, and that's through their renovations they're doing. They're already making waves in the portal, and they have the formula for it. It's just a matter of, will they do it, and how quickly will they do it?
Yeah, Skip Johnson, a coach that I think a lot of teams tried to poach in the offseason, probably a good sign for the Sooners that they kept him. But, Graham, I know facilities have been an issue there before. You've been on their campus before. You've got a long way to go, but I think they've got millions committed to make that situation better.
Yeah, and I went there for the first time 2 years ago, seen all their facilities. Football's fantastic. Like, they no problem facility-wise with anything football-related. It's just everything else. Basketball arena, like, that's getting a facelift. Baseball, softball, everybody knows how good they are in softball. They've won the last 4 national championships, only team to ever do that. So they have the money. They are investing. If you think about it, it does feel like it's been a minute since Texas and Oklahoma, when it was announced that they were joining the SEC. But I mean, it's here we are 2 years later, and here it is. So why was there a 2-year time period? Well, it was to get as ready as possible for July 1st, 2024. So it's upon us. They got all the money invested in the facilities. Loves is a very big deal in the state of Oklahoma. I mean, that's where they're headquartered. So I know they're excited. I saw the video they released yesterday where they went to all the different SEC campuses with the Sooner schooner and the wagon and everything. Like, I remember driving around Oxford one day, like, why is the Sooner schooner on campus at Ole Miss? Well, they're probably doing that for social media, and that's exactly what they did. So they have already made their mark, and I'm sure Oklahoma fans are very excited to be members of the SEC.
Every time I think of the Sooner schooner, I think of that unfortunate mishap when it was taken the field. You guys have seen that, right?
Sharp of a turn.
Yeah, a little too much, but that's still all joking aside. That is a pretty cool thing to see that thing.
Oh yeah,
make its entrance. Texas. Speaking of making entrances, Texas, I think, has been to 38 College World Series, which I believe is a record. The Longhorns just got rid of David Pierce as they get into the SEC. That move made a little bit of news. We'll touch on that in a moment. But Graham, Texas joining the SEC for baseball. This is going to be really something fun to watch.
No doubt about it. You just touched on all the World Series that they've been to. This is one of the most historic college baseball programs. I mean, you got to think of Augie Garrido, you know, and everything that he did there. Then David Pierce was there 7 years, did a great job, obviously just got let go. And then they swung for the fences, pun intended. And boy, did they knock one out of the park hiring Jim Schlossnagle. He's been in Texas for so long. He thinks Schlossnagle's from Texas. He's not. He's just been in the state of Texas, TCU, A&M, and now Texas. So that they home run hire. He essentially, Schlossnagle brings almost everybody with him from A&M to Texas. So they will obviously fit right in. This is a team, they were in Omaha 2 years ago. Been a super regionals a lot as well under David Pierce. So brand new head coach. great facilities, you know, recruiting. I mean, Texas is, you're right in the heart of it recruiting wise. So they got everything you can ask for baseball wise. They will definitely fit right in the SEC.
Alfred, what are you looking forward to the most with Texas?
I mean, historically they match up with all well enough with all the other SEC schools to kind of just provide something special. I mean, we talked about it with Augie, and even beyond that, they've just been great. They made the tournament this year. On top of that, too, when people, you know, it was implied that they were going to fire David Pierce, they still were able to make the tournament. That just shows how much of a standard baseball has there. And it's going to be awesome, because we talked about it, too. I mean, obviously, the news all last week we did on here with baseball with Jim Schlossnagel and A&M and all that jazz that was happening and circulating around it. So it was tough, but it just shows how much rivalries are going to play a factor into this. I mean, Texas, I think when you match them up with other SEC schools, those games in baseball and a ton of other sports are spectacular. Obviously, A&M, Texas-Arkansas is a really big other game. When it happens, it draws some attention as well. And that's especially when you talk about baseball, that's a great matchup in and of itself. So the Longhorns, they're a team that spends NIL money a lot, and up there with, and if we're talking about baseball, up there with LSU and Tennessee, and they're going to be very competitive instantly. I think it's going to be instant with them, and it's a great pickup for this conference, especially with baseball, with the history they have and the success that they can bring, you know, really, really, really quickly once they get on the scene.
Yeah, last championship for Texas, 2005. They were runner-ups in 2004. Those teams were just loaded with future major leaguers, maybe not superstars, but a lot of guys at least made it for a cup of coffee. Runner-up in 2009. They've not been to the title series since 2009, although they have been to Omaha five times since, including 2021 and 2022. That's where the standard is. David Pierce had not gone to Omaha in 2 years, and that was good enough for him to be out of there. But speaking of that, it leads us to the next topic. The coaching carousel. Boy, were some fireworks created last week when Texas poached Jim Schlossnagel from Texas A&M. Guys, I've reacted to that. We reacted to that a little bit in our own video, and then I talked about the A&M hire, which we'll get to in a minute. But with the dust having settled on that, that was one of the wildest things, Graham, that I've seen in college baseball.
Me too. It just go back to the timeline. National championship game Monday, named head coach Texas Tuesday. A&M names a head coach, I think, on Saturday. So all of that goes down in like a 6-day window. Just absolute madness. What a hire for Texas. Again, I feel bad for Texas A&M fans. Can't imagine losing like a top five head coach in the sport, but you lose him to your biggest rival. So that definitely has to sting, but great hire by Texas. Was fascinated to see what in the world is A&M going to do. They talk to a lot of different people, and they just go the route of hiring the youngest head coach at the Power Four level now. That's weird to say now, Power Four. Michael Early, youngest head coach at the Power Four level. He's only been in two places, guys. He's been at Arizona State and Texas A&M. Never been a head coach. So we'll see how it shakes out for Texas A&M. Obviously, the players love him. Big reason why he gets hired. And you got to think a lot of these guys now at Texas A&M will stay in College Station, which is good news short term for the Aggies, because they got a ton of talent returning, and they will definitely be right in the mix of it in the SEC this upcoming season.
Yeah, the portal factor, I think, had a lot to do probably with the timing of the hire. I can't prove it, but it had to. We'll get to that later. But Alfred, I know one of the things that caught our eye is Jim Schlossnagel takes his entire staff with him to Austin. And then a couple of days later, Early gets the job, heads back to College Station. And it made a very interesting hire with Troy Tulowitzki, who not long ago was, you know, probably a top five, top 10 player in Major League Baseball, something along those lines. That was kind of an interesting move by the Longhorns there, Alfred.
It was. And I certainly did, a double take listening to that name. I'm like, isn't he like playing Major League Baseball? What's going on? But not anymore. He's in college, and he's been a really good hitting coach. was a great player in college as well at Long Beach State, 3 years there, very talented hitter, went on to the majors and had a wonderful career with the Rockies. He played for the Blue Jays a little bit as well. And now here he is once again, and everywhere he's gone, it seems like teams hit really, really well. I mean, he went to Texas back in 2022 when they went to Omaha. That was when they had their school record, 128 home runs. And even recent this season, Texas's hitting was back on it again with a team average of 288 and 112 homers. So kind of just a tad shy of their school record compared to other seasons. And he provides a lot. I think the good thing about it is he's younger, obviously. I mean, he's freshly retired from Major League Baseball. I think he retired in like 2019 or something. And yeah, I think that makes him very, you know, relatable with players and stuff. And you look at what he's done so far in his hitting coach career in college. It's been exceptional. Teams are hitting for power with him. And I think we can expect the same thing from him in 2025.
Yeah, wish he could have stayed healthy as a major leaguer, because I thought he had a chance to be maybe a Hall of Famer. He just, it felt like the last, I don't know, 8 years of his career, something along those lines, he just could not consistently stay healthy. But 13-year major league veteran, five-time All-Star, been on the Texas staff from 20 to 22. And as you said, it had done some good things with that. But, yeah, Michael Early at A&M was the hire there. We'll touch on that a little bit later in the transfer portal. But I think one thing that shocked us, and it's been a couple of weeks, we didn't do a reaction to it because we're in the middle of other stuff with covering the College World Series. But, Graham, how shocked were you that South Carolina went back to – well, not back to Paul Menary, but pulled him out of retirement? That was not one I had on my radar when that job opened.
No, I don't think anybody had that on their bingo card. And for South Carolina, it sounds like they went after Dan McDonald. He stays at Louisville. They go after Cliff Godwin. He stays at East Carolina. I think they flirted with the idea of the head coach at Tampa, the Division II school. He's been a monster at the Division II level. Mm-hmm. He's won multiple national championships. I was told, like, the university pays for his house, and he has a house with his family. Like, they literally live right on the beach. So he's extremely happy where he is, and so he stays put at Tampa. I don't know how real it was that South Carolina went after him. So, you know, Ray Tanner, South Carolina, unique situation where the athletic director is one of the most successful college baseball head coaches ever. So I think it just sounds like it got to the point where Ray Tanner – called one of his buddies. Everybody respects both Ray Tanner and Paul Menary, and they got together. You know, might have been one of those things like, hey, you know, if we were to hire you, like, what would it look like? What would it take? And Paul Menary, been out of the game for 3 years. He's 66 years old now. Like, to me, it's a risk, because think of how different the game has changed, not only in baseball, but all of collegiate athletics from 3 years ago. And if you remember Menary, that team, his last LSU team, they got sent out west to Eugene for a regional, and they kind of ended up winning it by surprise. And then they go play Tennessee and Knoxville for those super regionals. And that was like the beginning of Tony Vitello taking off, going to Omaha. So that was kind of the last time we saw Paul Menary, legend of a head coach, national championship, almost won another one with LSU. He's taken two programs to Omaha. On the field, I like, he's a fantastic coach, but how will he adjust to the NIL period where we are today, and especially just being out of it for 3 years? And also, like, how is he health wise? I know he had like neck stuff, you know, his health was definitely an issue towards the end of his tenure at LSU. You know, I hope that he's healthy and will be able to go, but so far he's put together a really good staff at South Carolina. They've hit the portal hard, but to me, just a risky hire, just for the fact that he's been out of the game for 3 years now. How often over the years have you seen somebody come out of retirement in any sport after a 3 year layoff and just pick right back up where they left off? I mean, right off the top of my head, Joe Gibbs, you remember with in the NFL with Washington, like, he won multiple Super Bowls, leaves, comes back, took them to the playoffs, but they never came close to winning a Super Bowl. So curious to see just what that looks like for South Carolina moving forward. But again, just shows you how good the SEC is. How many coaches in this conference have either A, won a national championship, or B, been to Omaha? He's on that list.
Alfred is the resident South Carolinian in this group. What has been the reaction in the Palmetto State and maybe the early impact of Palmieri's hire at South Carolina?
Yeah, Graham touched on it. Not the expected hire, but I don't think anyone's really complaining about it at the same time either. I think the biggest thing I saw, I think they were going to go after Cliff Godwin pretty hard. And obviously, Godwin's pretty satisfied with where he is at East Carolina. The biggest thing I think people were looking for, and we talked about this a little, Chris, during the season. Mark Kingston did all he could to do a great job with the Gamecocks. He finished above 500 in his coaching stint at South Carolina in SEC play. That in and of itself is a feat, just based on how tough this conference is. Hope he does well in Creighton. Really nice coach. But I think the problem with him was he wasn't getting far enough in these NCAA tournaments like people wanted to. And especially with the momentum they had this year in Hoover, it seemed like South Carolina could at least make a super regional and be competitive in it if they wanted to. That didn't happen. They get bounced in Raleigh. And the biggest thing when I look at Palmieri and all of the stuff he's done, all the regionals he's won, I mean, are off the charts. And that in and of itself is something South Carolina needs. South Carolina, we know very well with Ray Turner as AD, their goal is to win a national title eventually. And Palmieri has the potential to do that. We've seen it before in 2009. But I think the biggest thing is how he's going to do in the portal. So far, we're going to get into the portal in a sec. They've made a good move that I liked a lot that I'll get into later on that they made. But beyond that, can they do well in the NCAA tournament? He's done it before. Maybe it's not anything like exponentially great like other coaches in college baseball's history, but he has the national title winningness about him. He's been to Omaha before, all this stuff. It's something that can work over time. My one concern, though, that I have is his age and health, and we touched on it a little. It seems like if South Carolina wants to have long-term baseball success, like kind of like what Ray Tanner did, but extended, I don't know if this was – it seems weird to go this route, but at the same time, I'm not going to knock it too much. Palmieri is a great coach. And, again, someone they didn't – I don't think a lot of fans expected to hire or anything like that, but one they won't complain about. And it's someone who is going to keep them very competitive in this tough conference.
Yeah, Ray Tanner set them up with that incredible run, winning back-to-back national titles and then coming within a game of winning a third. I think that was against Arizona in his last year before retiring. It's almost impossible to go back-to-back, and three would have been unheard of. But Carolina's, you know, the bar was set impossibly high at that point. And Carolina has been good since, but not great. We'll see if Palmieri can get the Gamecocks back to that elite territory. All right. A couple more things on the coaching carousel. Graham, you're in the Magnolia State. You're very familiar with Ole Miss's situation. Mike Bianco has made some interesting moves at Ole Miss. Tell us more about those.
Yeah, so after the season ended, Mike Bianco, you know, normal, this happens in every sport, head coach sits down, visits, goes over everything with the athletic directors. So he has his annual meeting with Ole Miss athletic director Keith Carter, and he says, look, I want to make a change. That change is he's bringing in a pitching coach. So Ole Miss has not had really a pitching coach in over 15 years. Mike Bianco was a catcher, Carl Lafferty, catcher, Mike Clement, catcher. So the staff is mostly catchers, and Mike Bianco, for the longest time, he's called every single pitch that an Ole Miss pitcher has thrown. So what does he do? He brings in Joel Mangrum. Joel Mangrum is he's been with the Cleveland Guardians farm system. He is the Cleveland pitching coordinator, not actually with the Guardians, but, you know, in their minor league system. He's been with the Cleveland's organization for 6 years now. He is a Mississippian, so he's coming back to his home state. And the plan is Mike Bianco will be CEO-style type head coach, you know, just kind of oversee everything that aspect of it. And Joel Mangrum comes in, and the plan is, as of right now, you know, he will handle all the pitchers, call the pitches during the game, you know, that kind of setup. Is that what's going to happen? We'll have to wait and find out. But that is, at least for now, kind of the game plan on paper. You know, it kind of reminds me of, you remember just this past football season, Jimbo Fisher bringing in Bobby Petrino. Like, is Bobby Petrino going to call the plays? Well, he did call the plays. Yeah. They were Jimbo's plays. Like, Bobby did not have, you know, full reign on the offense. So we'll wait and see what happens. But again, Ole Miss has not had a pitching coach or really anybody on staff like that in over 15 years. Kyle Bunn was kind of the last coach like this. Kyle Bunn was at Ole Miss, Alabama, Houston, Indiana. You know, he's kind of bounced around and been all over the place. So it's been the Mike Bianco show pitching wise for many, many years at Ole Miss. So he makes this change. He keeps Mike Clement as the hitting coach. Carl Lafferty is kind of like their recruiting coordinator. And then so now Joel Mangrum returns, like gives up the professional baseball gig to come back to his home state and coach at Ole Miss. And if you remember, like Mickey Callaway, similar situation. He was with Cleveland working with the pitchers, and he parlayed that into the head coaching job, being the manager for the New York Mets. So yeah, it's a lot to give up, but Mangrum is excited to be back in his home state, and here he is in the SEC.
Yeah, I was going to – it's funny, before you even said it, I was thinking the Jimbo Fisher situation. Like, is it going to be one – I was in the room at Media Day last year when somebody asked him about turning over the reins, and that should have been like a 10-second answer. And when it turned into a 2-minute answer, I was like, oh, boy.
Right. Yeah, you kind of knew right then and there. Yeah, this might
not
work. Yeah,
I remember tweeting or saying something about it and got some pushback for some A&M people. But I think I don't know. You just, when you've been in the media long enough, you kind of learn to watch for things that are out of place, or like, I wouldn't have handled it that way. But we'll see. Hopefully for Ole Miss, it will not be that. But how many guys now? Like, it's weird. It seems like the overlap between college baseball and MLB didn't used to be a big deal. Like, I'm trying to think. Pat Murphy took the Padres managing job after being at Arizona State. That's one of the first crossovers I remember. We saw, you know, LSU and, you know, some other teams now. You know, Georgia went and hired Wes Johnson after LSU brought him out of the major. In the middle of the season, he left Minnesota for LSU to be the pitching coach, which should tell you something about the money SEC teams are starting to put into baseball now. But it seems like there's been an increased migration maybe from MLB to college, which is really not something that I would have thought we'd seen even a decade ago.
Yeah. The only thing I would say, as somebody that has spent 3 years in minor league baseball, let me tell you, travel, facilities, the fan support, it's light years ahead at the SEC level than in minor league baseball. And then the other reason, like in college baseball now, salaries are off the charts. So you can be a head coach or even an assistant coach and make a good living and not have to worry about, you know, that aspect of it for your family and everything. Because in minor league baseball, I mean, even Major League Baseball, managers don't make $1 million, not like what we see in the SEC. And also, like, you have more of an impact, I feel, at the collegiate level than you do in minor league baseball. Because, like, if you have a top prospect, you have to be super careful. And, you know, you could have some games where, like, if you have your number one pick and it's a pitcher, okay, we're only throwing changeups and fastballs today. Like, we're not throwing sliders, curveballs. Like, that stuff happens a lot, more than you would think. And then obviously, of course, in college and the SEC, like, these pitching coaches, you know, they can throw whatever, you know, you call. And I mean, you call all the shots and run the show. But I can tell you, as somebody that's been on a bus, a lot of long bus rides, it is a million times easier to hop on that, you know, plane leaving Oxford to go to Knoxville, wherever in the SEC. Just the lifestyle is so much more better, easier, family friendly, whatever you want to say, in the SEC than it is in minor league baseball.
No doubt. And another topic, I've always wondered, like, if NIL money is going to cut into players going to the pros, because if you could, you know, make $1 million going to Mississippi State or Ole Miss or South Carolina or Tennessee or Vandy or whoever, even if it doesn't touch the signing bonus, like, if you believe in yourself, you know, say you can get $1.5 million for the Red Sox, but that much go to college. I do wonder at some point, because most of those guys end up getting taken on the rebound anyway after college. Yeah. I do wonder if we'll see – it's another topic for another show, but if we'll see college baseball with the NIL situation cut into maybe some of these guys going pro.
For sure.
But last one before we go to transfer portal news. Big moves in Vanderbilt, too. Tim Corbin fired Mike Baxter, who'd been his hitting coach, I think, for 7 years. Tim Corbin had coached him at Vanderbilt back about 20 years ago. I know that staff is very close-knit. You don't see a lot of staff changes with Tim Corbin, but I think their hitting had declined pretty precipitously since that 2019 College World Series team, and had just gone in the wrong direction for a few years. They got rid of him. And also Tyler Shoemake, who just been hired a year or two ago as an assistant. They hired Jason King, who's Dayton's head coach, I think will be their hitting coach, and Ty Blankmeyer, who was the recruiting coordinator at Duke. So that's Vanderbilt's assistants now are King, Blankmeyer, and of course Scott Brown has been the pitching coach there since speaking of Major League Baseball. Derek Johnson left Vandy for the majors a few years back. Brown's been there, I don't know, 12, 15 years now, whatever it's been, but it's been a minute. And so you don't often see Tim Corbin make a major staff shakeup, but getting rid of 2/3 of your staff, including a guy that I know was near and dear to his heart, is his hitting coach and a guy that he coached in college, that made some waves around the college baseball landscape too. And maybe in the transfer portal is Vanderbilt among a number of teams that has made some nice additions to the portal. And we're doing this on Tuesday, July 2nd. So there's a lot of portal news to go. You know, if you're like, hey, why aren't you guys talking about this or that? Well, it probably happened after we dropped this episode, but we'll catch up on those future moves. But let's start here. The stuff that's happened as we are doing this right now. Graham, has any school had a rougher go of it since the end of the season than Ole Miss?
If you can point me in the direction of one, I would love to see it. But yes, it is. A lot of Ole Miss fans, it's kind of like, okay, try not to panic. Still a long way to go. Don't want to overreact one way or the other. But position player wise, Andrew Fisher announced that he is leaving after the season ended. You know, he put together a statement like, I'm coming back, you know, one of those things. And then he announced this week that he is leaving. So this will be his third different school in 3 years. So this is the new norm. Like, when I think of that just sounds exhausting to me. So position player wise, that's somebody that hit over 20 home runs. Like, that is a very good player. He's gonna, I'd be stunned.
Maybe a first rounder.
Yeah. I'd be stunned if he does not end up in the SEC somewhere. Pitching wise, this has been the one that has really been like eye popping. Let's look at the Ole Miss pitchers. Injury wise, two guys that did not pitch this past season. One of those is Hunter Elliott. Kind of hasn't pitched in 2 years now. Hunter Elliott was a true freshman, a big time pitcher on that national championship Ole Miss team. He did pitch in the series against Oklahoma. That was a big loss. So he got hurt two seasons ago and just really hasn't been healthy and been able to pitch. Ole Miss doesn't know if he's going to come back. He's from Tupelo, Mississippi, right down the road. So his options are he will either get drafted, go pro, or maybe come back to Ole Miss. He hasn't announced one way or the other what he's going to do. The other arm, Xavier Rivas, he got hurt right before the season started, did not pitch at all this season. Same situation. Will he go pro? Will he come back? Or, I mean, I guess he could transfer somewhere else if he wanted to. Other arms, Grayson Saunier, he was a big-time recruit coming out of high school. he's hit the portal. This is somebody, he's got all the tools, electric stuff, hasn't quite been able to put it together yet. I'll be fascinated to see where he ends up, but he's not at Ole Miss anymore. JT Quinn is another one, another big time recruit coming out of high school. Ole Miss really couldn't figure out how to handle him, start him, put him in the bullpen. He got hurt this past season. He was dealing with a back injury. Like, he was warming up in the bullpen, and Mike Bianco walked to the mound and called for him to come in, and he got hurt. Like, for his last warm-up pitch, walking off the mound in the bullpen, and he just never really came back and was 100% healthy. So he's gone. And then Liam Doyle yesterday, that was another big one. He's a Coastal Carolina transfer, but he was really the Saturday starter this past season for Ole Miss. I'd be stunned if he ends up somewhere outside of the SEC. Like, he is a very, very, very good arm. That he will be a number two starter for somebody in the SEC. And so he announced yesterday. So that's a lot of arms that I just touched on. The only one that hasn't announced, Riley Maddox. He was a Friday night guy this past season.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got eligibility left. And, I mean, Ole Miss fans are hoping that, you know, he'll be a Rebel next season. But you never know. It's pitching-wise, under Mike Bianco, you never really had to worry about pitching. Like, he always seemed to have – like a top guy and then a lot of quality arms, but never anything like this where there's so many question marks and uncertainty. They've only got one transfer portal pitcher coming in, and that is a guy that Jake Mangrum, the new pitching coach, really likes. And he's a group of five kid. He's not at the power five level. So it's just never really seen anything like this.
Yeah.
You know, as an Ole Miss baseball fan, and everybody's just kind of worried, like, what in the world does the future look like? Because right now it just seems like a lot of people are jumping ship.
Graham, it's just been weird because they win the national title in 2022, and I know that they barely made it in and, you know, maybe didn't even have the best case of the bubble teams. I mean, we could argue it at least. Bianco was kind of on the hot seat there at that point. But I looked to the years before that. He'd just been so consistent, consistent. And Ole Miss had always had pitching. You always would defend. I just felt like Ole Miss was, you know, almost right up there kind of with Arkansas, just as a rock that every year they're going to be, not just in the SEC tournament, but the NCAA tournament. I know the postseason didn't go the way Mike Bianco and Ole Miss fans wanted it to go, but, man, they just were in a regional every year. Then they win a national title in 2022. They hit it on the portal with a couple of kids. I just never would have guessed that after Ole Miss won a national title with the consistent program that Mike Bianco has run, with the track record of developing arms, you know, Lance Lynn is a guy they developed. Who was the other guy that pitched with him on that staff? Major leaguer still pitching too. And I've gone blank. If you say it, I'll know it.
But Philip Irvin was around that time. I mean, he's Bobby Wall. Like, he's had a lot of guys make the major league level, or, I mean, get as high to AAA. But, I mean, he's always had quality, true number one guys. Were you thinking of Pomeranz, by the way?
Drew Pomeranz. That's exactly who I was thinking of. And I think he's still pitching or just retired. But, yeah, I mean, I just remember Ole Miss was so – it's just hard to believe. How do you explain what's happened in the 2 years since the national title? I can't put a finger on it.
This could take a while.
give me the short version. This may be worth a future episode, but give me the cliff notes.
This is my opinion. It's a combination of a lot of different things. Number one, your point, you are right. Mike Bianco, his calling card, he's always been consistent. He's never had the season where it's just cratered prior to these last two seasons. Like, prior to these last two seasons, the fewest amount of SEC wins that he's had in a single season was 13. That's not awful. That's not great, but, like, that's not falling off the map. The team 2 years ago, I think six wins, I think, and then this past season, 11. So part of it is developing homegrown talent. Like you just named a lot of guys that were homegrown talent. And when you look back at the team that won the national championship, Tim Elko felt like was at Ole Miss for a decade. Justin Bench, a guy that was at Ole Miss for a very long time. Kevin Graham, it was either high school guys that signed with Ole Miss and stayed 3 or 4 years, or junior college guys that signed with Ole Miss coming out of JUCO and were there for a couple of years as well. Ole Miss has always been good at finding talent and developing them. And then for whatever reason, the past couple of years just has not gone that way. And then you throw in the transfer portal, and when you lean on the transfer portal, you gotta hit. I mean, you absolutely have to hit. And Ole Miss has found itself in a situation where Ole Miss doesn't really have like two or three or four needs. Ole Miss has 8 to 9 needs. And when you only have a certain amount of budget, you have to balance it as best as you can, and you have to hit. You know, when you think about guys like, you remember Sonny D at Auburn, Sanford transfer, and just lit the league on fire. I felt Ole Miss and a lot of other teams are in this boat. Okay, we're going to get this group of five guy, and they're going to set the SEC on fire. Well, that doesn't necessarily happen all the time. Ole Miss got Trayson Hughes this past season out of Mercer. He put up big numbers at Mercer, same league as Sanford in the SoCon. And Trayson Hughes barely plays this past season, and he is now in the portal, and he's not coming back to Ole Miss. So it's just a combination of a lot of holes due to lack of development, position player-wise and pitching-wise, and then just this is a new era than what, as we've talked about, than the last 5-10 years. Think of how different everything is now from 10 years ago. Mike Bianco, he has to figure out the best way to handle – the transfer portal. You remember, like, it wasn't that long ago, baseball wise, if a kid was committed to a school, that was it. Baseball,
he was committed.
Like that kid was going to that school. And if for whatever reason a head coach didn't know that and recruited the kid, they would call the school that he was committed to. Sorry, I had no idea. I didn't know he was committed to you. I will back off. Like, he's yours. Baseball is not that way anymore.
No,
and you kind of have to be cutthroat. If you have somebody on your roster that isn't going to play or isn't what you thought that he would be, you got to cut bait. Like, you have to move on quickly. And Mike Bianco is as classy as a human being as you will ever see. Like, he's not really built or designed that way. And I think he's trying to figure out the best way to navigate that part of the transfer portal, and then also high school talent. So, I mean, it's just, it's a big mix of different things, but the main one is developing high school talent and then also trying to navigate the transfer portal. Because you look at a guy like Tony Vitello, like when you look at him, no doubt in my mind, he's going to do whatever it takes to win.
Yeah.
Like if he doesn't think that you can help his team, like, he'll move on. And I think some of these old school guys that have been doing this in this conference for a while, like Corbin, Van Horn, it's an adjustment period, and it's just not what they were used to for a decade plus.
Yeah. And I feel like the other thing, and we may do a whole episode on this later. We hadn't touched on Mississippi State much today, but I feel like that the top in-state talent out of high school, like Dakota Jordan, in-state kid, went to Mississippi State. Austin Riley was going to go to Mississippi State, I think. Got drafted by the Braves, went there. Good decision for him. I feel like there's been maybe a little bit of a hole there. But, Alfred, I promise we hadn't put you in timeout. but I think Tennessee was your cue. The Vols, it's going to be an interesting offseason because, look, the goal in baseball is to play as long as you can. But Tony Vitello in an interesting situation because they played till the last day possible of the college season. They're going to lose, you know, what, 5 hitters, maybe in the top 75 of the draft, you know, in addition to some pitchers. And then a couple of kids hit the portal. And I don't think Tennessee's gotten a commitment yet as we speak. Give us the rundown on the Vols in terms of what's been lost in the portal. Because kind of a couple of guys that I would have thought would have been their next guys up in that lineup have now hit the portal.
Yeah, and there's three that have. The main headliner to it is the guy I think you're referring to, Chris, Robin Villeneuve, Canadian kid who came in. He was a guy who he didn't necessarily play a good bit, but he played in midweeks and showed a lot of power in those midweek games. So it kind of seems like, again, it was kind of like the conversation you and Graham just had. If we were, you know, going back 10 years ago, it would have been like, oh, this guy's going to, you know, play a lot next year. Get ready. And that's kind of like the whole thing with midweeks. And that's just not the case in college baseball anymore. So he's out. I think that tells me slightly, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, that there's transfer moves incoming. And I mean, at this point, if you're Tennessee, you can get a lot of guys in the transfer portal to come play for you in Knoxville. He's on there. There's a pitcher on there, Derek Schaefer. Did not pitch a lot this year, 8 2/3. I think he's just leaving to go get more reps, which is reasonable. You know, Tennessee is obviously going to get more kids coming in. They have some high school recruits who can pitch as well. It just seems like he's just getting shuffled into the deck, and he's not making his way to the top of it. So he's out as well. And then Bradkey Loudy is the other one who is transferring out too. He was kind of like not the hero against Evansville, but he was a pinch hitter against Evansville when, you know, the stuff with Christian Moore and his injury was all happening. He's out as well. Sort of similar to Villeneuve. It just seems like, you know, they have hitters coming in and whatnot that, you know, that Tony Vitale is going to bring in and stuff. And it's just interesting because it seems like, yeah, Tennessee's going to lose a lot of guys in this draft, mainly a lot of hitters and then even some pitching. Drew Beam's going to get drafted at some point this July. And, you know, it just seems like they're going to be losing a lot. And, you know, albeit they're going to be able to recruit a good bit, but it just seems funny. And I saw too, Tony Vitale is already going after Lavalette as well. And Lavalette's the headliner to this portal so far. So he's obviously making these big moves, trying to get people to come in. And it just, that just seems like why Villeneuve, Loudry, and then Schaefer are moving out. It's just people coming in and they know that they're going to get shuffled back into this card deck of Tennessee talent. So they're taking their talents elsewhere as well. And then other news about Tennessee. I totally forgot about this kid from 2023. Zane Denton committed recently to Austin Peay. So I think he was just going through mental health stuff or something like that this past season. That's why he didn't play. I think the Billy Amick transfer kind of, you know, played a factor into it as well. Yeah. But he's going to be going elsewhere outside of Tennessee too. Kind of weird. He was a big time player in that 2023 tournament run they had. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people out right now for Tennessee, no one in as of yet, but I think it clearly just indicates Tony Vitale and the Vols are just going to be making moves.
Yeah, I think that's the most likely outcome. And got it. I think the number one rated recruiting class too. I think 24 commitments. We'll see how many actually make it to campus. I think a lot of schools are going through that crunch right now with balancing commitments they've had for a while with got to fill an immediate need in the portal. And if you're not doing it, your competitor is. The Zane Denton situation will be interesting. He transferred to Austin Peay. Of course, Denton transferred to Tennessee from Alabama. Denton is a kid from the Brentwood area of Tennessee, which is right around where I am. So he moved closer to home to get to Austin Peay. Sticking in the middle Tennessee area, let's talk about Vanderbilt for just a minute. I'll touch on that one. Tim Corbin has really changed his approach in the portal. They've added some really good kids. Probably the highlight is Joseph, I guess it's Zierwa, D-Z-I-E-R-W-A, the lefty from Michigan State. Cody Boker from Georgetown, who was kind of a high-volume reliever. I think maybe could start, could relieve. They got David Mendez, the freshman of the year in the Atlantic 10. He's following his head coach, who now the hitting coordinator at Vanderbilt, to Nashville. Connor Fennell also coming from Dayton. He's a guy who was a weekend arm for the Flyers. And then Vanderbilt added Mike Mancini last night from James Madison, who was a kid who hit 15 home runs this year. I think hit 4 in the regional and really caught some headlines with that. So Vandy has really made some moves in the portal. Alfred, I'll go back to you with Florida, staying in the old SEC East. I feel like you're a resident Florida beat reporter during the postseason. You went and saw that team play a few times. The Cade Fisher transfer was interesting. What else has caught your eye about the comings and goings in Gainesville?
Yeah, I'm sort of everywhere I go, it seems like the Florida Gators just happen to have a game. It's strange. Thank you, Doug Kingsmore Stadium, for making that happen. But the weird thing with Florida and the weird thing about Cade Fisher leaving, they're going to have a ton of pitching coming back because they were all young, and that was part of the problem they had. And it seemed like Cade Fisher would be at the center of that, but I guess, you know, maybe he's getting some phone calls or texts about NIL offers elsewhere that he likes more. Weird situation, but I mean, every guy, I mean, you scan your finger through Florida's pitching staff and you land on a name, he's probably going to come back. And that's what the situation with them is. One guy that is going there, funny enough, that I just mentioned Clemson, Billy Barlow has been one of the big moves that they got. He was a reliever for the Tigers this past year. Sort of didn't play a lot in 22 and or I guess 2023. He only pitched in 3 innings and a third. He came back in 2024, had 48 innings and a third pitched. Not necessarily high strikeouts, but I think mainly he's just a guy you use, gets a lot of ground balls, high leverage, that sort of scenario. He's also older, so I think that's going to help with this younger staff, him being in there and stuff. And I think Florida's pitching evaluation has been good. I mean, you guys know that the pitching talent there, it's raw and untapped so far. And I think we got a hint of it with guys like Brandon Neely and whatnot in the tournament with what they actually could do. We just didn't see it during the season because they were struggling. But another big move that they made, I always pronounce this name wrong too. I apologize in advance. Blake Cyr, did I say that right? C-Y-R.
Got it.
Yeah, I got it right there. He comes in from Miami. He was a younger guy this year. 284 average. Not necessarily a power hitter, 7 home runs, but 21 RBIs. Definitely could have. It doesn't seem like he had a lot of at bats, but yeah, 95 at bats this past year compared to 200 a year ago in 2023. But it's a guy who's a talented hitter and who's sat, you know, no matter what the at bats he gets, he sits right around the 300 range. So it's another talented hitter coming in for the Gators, staying in the state too. I mean, they're just kind of, you know, tapping into each team in the state of Florida and getting their pick of the litter. So those are two big names that are coming in. Another name coming out aside from Fisher is Michael Robertson, who played in the outfield a lot for them. He was the hero of that Clemson game that went on forever. He had that walk-off hit that eventually sent them to Omaha. He's leaving. He didn't have necessarily, besides the postseason, I don't think his year was that crazy, but it's another guy heading out. I would just assume because Florida either has some recruits coming in, because we know Kevin O'Sullivan likes to really, really, really take all of Florida for himself because of how talented that state is with baseball. So might be a reason Robertson's heading out elsewhere, but Florida fans have a lot to be excited about. You have an older relief pitcher coming in to help you with your staff and a talented hitter who kind of did not play as much as he normally did this past year, who has a chance to really shine in Gainesville. And, you know, even with guys leaving, it's certainly a program that has the NIL money and the ability to replace talent quickly.
All right. Before I shift our attention back to the west side of the conference, staying in your home state of South Carolina, I know you're a big fan of the portal, one of the portal pitching additions that South Carolina's made. And by the way.
Oh, yeah. No, I alluded to it when we were talking about Manieri earlier. They landed Jarvis Evans from Georgia. I about said for the longest time when I was, you know, trying to type this up on Twitter, I was saying Jarvis Jones. I'm like, it's not football, Alfred. It's wrong Georgia Jarvis. But Jarvis Evans comes in. He's a guy who his ERA went a little up this year, but he pitched a lot more innings. At least he got more reps in, faced a lot more batters. The opposing batting average went up. So those two things obviously might have went up if you're going to face more batters and whatnot. The biggest thing with him is his strikeout. 47 strikeouts and 39 and a third this year. Very good stuff, huge stuff. And, you know, he goes into a situation at South Carolina where they're kind of loading the barrel of the gun, you know, to shoot out and be very, very competitive. And he has a chance to be one of the top guys in their starting rotation at the very least. I mean, I would assume that's why they got him anyway. And it's probably one of the more impressive moves. I did not expect him. It was a name I didn't really expect to enter or anything like that. But I think he just jumped at the opportunity of pitching for Paul Maneri, and who wouldn't? So Jarvis Evans being a Gamecock makes him, you know, one of these potentially one of these top guys in a year. We could see South Carolina have a very successful year, far beyond anything we saw with Mark Kingston.
All right, Graham, let's close it by a discussion on Arkansas and Texas A&M. Let's go with the Razorbacks first. Really impressed with some additions they've made. They've really bolstered themselves on the pitching side. Zach Root of East Carolina. And Landon, and I will probably botch this, but I will sure try to get it right. Beedleschies, I guess, from Ohio State. Beedleschies, however that is pronounced. A couple of pitchers who lead the haul that Dave Van Horn has gotten so far. They've also landed a couple of hitters. Logan Maxwell from TCU. Rocco Pepe from Fresno State. Feels like Arkansas is going to end up with one of the top transfer hauls before it's all said and done, Graham.
For sure. And under Van Horn, Arkansas, they always seem to have at least one reliable arm that you can count on. You know, Haken Smith this past season, it was Cobb not that long ago. I feel like Cobb threw every single pitch for the Razorbacks his last year there. So they always have somebody that you can count on the mound. Where I think where Arkansas needs to address, and you just touched on what they done position player wise. If there was one area where they were kind of lacking this past season, it was offensively and their approach at the plate. So their additions, I know that's kind of what they're in the market for. They need bats, they need doubles, they need home runs. That's kind of what they're aiming for, and they hope that those needs that they got in the portal address everything that they need position player wise and in their lineup, because that if they want to get to where they're going, Van Horn, you know, their offense has to, you know, tick up a notch from where they have been the last couple of years.
Yeah. And finally, Texas A&M, I guess could end up with one of the top portal hauls, technically speaking, because half its lineup, I think five guys hit the portal, not to mention some pitching and some reserves. But it one of the things that Kendall Rogers tweeted the moment that it appeared or became clear that A&M was going to hire Michael Early is that he expected all those guys to be back. If Early can bring back Jace Laviolette, Gavin Grahovac, that not only boosts a roster that I would think would be top five in the country coming in the next year, but also, you know, keep some guys from migrating to LSU or Tennessee or Florida or Vandy or wherever they would have wound up. So a lot of eyes on College Station as the portal closes.
Well, I mean, it should be, especially, which is why Trev Alberts wanted to move as fast as he did. You never know with the transfer portal. Look, tampering happens. You can act like it doesn't. It happens all the time in every sport. And especially after the coaching change, Schlossnagel leaving, I guarantee you everybody was reaching out to everybody on the Texas A&M team. So they move quickly. They get Michael Early, and probably a big reason why they made that hire. The players love him, and Trev Alberts is hoping that he can keep most of that roster intact in College Station.
All right, finally, Alfred, one guy from Auburn. We hadn't spent a lot of time on Butch Thompson's Tigers today, but they did hit it big in the portal with Sonny DeShera a couple of years ago. Tell us about what Butch Thompson has done in adding this offseason.
Yeah, there's one move that I liked a lot from them. Mason Koch, or Coach, it's spelled K-O-C-H, from Creighton. He's a reliever from there. The reason he might have moved out, funny enough, I just said his name not too long ago. Maybe Mark Kingston coming there and getting a new coach pushed him out, and he wanted to go somewhere else. Either way, he's ending up at Auburn. He's the what impresses me the most. I think I just like strikeouts because it seems like that's what I like the most out of anything. 38 and a third this season, and 60 strikeouts over the course of that stretch. He sent a lot of batters back to the bench. And I mean, you look at the opposing batting average too, 226 out of 168 faced. Doesn't give up a lot of hits, only hit three batters over that stretch. Walks only 17, not too bad there either. So it looks like a high volume reliever, good righty coming out of Omaha, going down to Auburn to play. And it's something, I mean, you know, it's something Butch Thompson, I'm sure, is not going to complain about. It was an Auburn team kind of in limbo for a lot of this season. And, you know, it's just another one move closer to making their team that much better for 2025.
Finally, keep an eye on Rob Walton in Alabama. A couple of big additions so far, including Brady Neal from LSU. All right, that's it for today. We'll be back next week with some draft talk, with some portal talk. It's going to be a weekly show, so be sure to hit that subscribe button, hit that like button. For Alfred Esmond and Graham Doty, I'm Chris Lee. We are Southeastern 16, presented by BetOnline.